The Red Eye Radio podcast is a service of Freightliner and Detroit.
Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or you're just starting your day, welcome to the show. This is Red Eye Radio.
All across America, 866-90-RED-EYE. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Well, it's what Biden said yesterday. I have the audio here again to play his words. I was reading the Hill.com, and the Hill.com has a headline that says, Biden says he wants to cure cancer. It's like, no, it's not what he said.
Mm-hmm.
No, here's what he actually said.
I promise you, if I'm elected president, you're going to see the single most important thing that changes in America is we're going to cure cancer.
So there you go.
Wow.
The Huffington Post came out, liberal publication, and said, well, the vice president has to understand that cancer is over 100 different diseases.
Right.
And so the fact that there is going to, or afflictions, and cancer mutations, and so to say that it's going to be cured, it's not going to happen.
No.
Look, the campaign, I would be so surprised if the campaign didn't come out today, and unless you double down on it and say, nope, we're going to do it.
Right.
But I have a feeling the campaign will come out and say, what he really meant was...
Yes. What the former vice president was trying to say was that is a mission. And, of course, he knows and he's well aware and we know that everybody is on that same mission and would like the same thing. But the thing is that...
And Trump doesn't want to cure cancer.
Well, that's it.
Right.
That's not his goal. So if you want to go with that, that's fine. But this is what I'll be doing. But he assigns himself a power through that. When you say, I want to become president and I want to secure the border, that's something that the president actually has the power to do. As long as the House will fund it, but he has the authority to secure the border.
Yes.
Okay? So he has that power. A president has that power. It is something very different. And, of course, it's right along with hope and change. It's not something you ever have to live up to if you're on the left. If Ted Cruz or Marco Rubio, let's say Trump were not running for president and, let's say we're in 2024, okay? And Mike Pence... Marco Rubio, Mike Pence isn't going to run. So Marco Rubio, Ted Cruz, conservatives are out there. Or it is Pence. They step up. I'm going to cure cancer. I promise.
Man.
wait, what?
I think that David Axelrod went after him yesterday. And said, look, he's going to fit into Trump's caricature about not being mentally prepared to be president. That was really an eye-opening statement
right.
when Axelrod said that.
Yeah, right.
Because he was an Obama advisor. And I wonder, I asked you the question, I believe, on and off the air, that they dealt with him. And I wonder if they look at it and say, oh, man, this isn't the guy that you want to run for president. And we've talked about, number one, how his poll numbers have been shrinking over the last couple of weeks as soon as he started stating what he was going to do. We know that he flip-flopped on the Hyde Amendment, which is making both sides suspicious as to his motivations, and he's already had a ton of gaffes. And then this comes out yesterday. I think the biggest political promise in American history. Which, of course, will probably be retracted today. Yeah. But, tell me another political promise in American history that has been this large.
Right.
And, you know, we had the caller that said, look, the thing is, he will give some people hope. And that's that's not the right thing to do. And when you think about, Obama appointed him to the Cancer Commission, and he had his whole moonshot, you know, the cancer moonshot, the same thing that the other caller said. Well, you know, we promised a moonshot, now we're promising cancer. Well, that's two different. And we stated this way back when they used the whole moonshot analogy for cancer. We said, look, it's ridiculous to do that because, and as we told the last caller, they actually had, you know, there was actually scientists that were in the government already had a blueprint as to what, how we would get, you know, how we would get there, how we would do that. And the blueprint came out very, very quickly when we knew. You know, we knew it would be Mercury, Gemini, Apollo. We knew how they were going to do it. And they knew the challenges. And a lot of the challenges was really the physics of, you know, what's actually in outer space. Mm-hmm. You know, what is the gravitational pull of the moon? And, you know, where a lot of it was theory. That was a lot of the things that they had to work out. You know, the theory of what they thought.
Right, sure. Yeah.
And the physics of it, and also putting together everything that they need to put together. But if you read, and like I say, Gene Kranz's book, Failure is Not an Option.
Right.
Is a great book.
Right.
And I suggest if you ever want to, you know, read about the beginning of the space program, that's the book. Because you can't get closer to it, you know, than Gene Kranz was, because he was there from really the very beginning all the way, you know, through the space shuttle years.
Right, right.
You know, what I think up until around 1990. So Kranz was around for a long time. And he was involved in all the, you know, he was involved and knew about all the different engineering and probably could explain it to you of everything from the rocket propulsion systems to the guidance systems to the materials used. You know, he went through the tragedy of the Apollo capsule catching on fire. And so when you actually read it, they believed that there wasn't doubt that they couldn't do it. It was just doing it and putting the infrastructure together to do it in order to get there.
Right. Yes. And
they didn't sit there and say, look, this isn't something we can't do. For example, if you brought scientists together and said, okay, the goal is that in the 8 years that Biden will be president, he says we will have a cure for cancer. Will that be true? And that probably the majority would say, no, you can't have a cure for cancer. We might make advances in some types of cancer, but we're not going to have a cure for all cancer.
Right.
No. When you put that question to those scientists and engineers, can we do it in 10 years? They all probably went, yes, we can, if we have the budget.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Because they knew we had the technology to do it. It's just, do we have the budget to create everything that we need to do all the testing that we need in that particular time frame? So, but yeah. Again, one of the callers who brought up the whole Kennedy promised the moon thing. Well, that's why they made that whole thing when after Bo Biden died and Obama made the vice president the head of the cancer moonshot effort. They used the moonshot because they're trying to make the relation to that. And you really can't.
No.
You really can't.
It's a very different kind of
science. We understand why they did that.
Mm-hmm. As a goal, absolutely.
Well, to be a pretty sick person that didn't want that goal.
Exactly.
I don't think we should. I don't think we should because Social Security will run out sooner.
It's like we're putting together a presidential commission against murder, right? You know, I mean, it's it just
Well, the President's Council on Physical Fitness sure hasn't worked out, has it?
Well, you know, and you might say, well, that's the Justice Department. But, I mean, if you come out with any cause, which goes back to the entire bogus political promises on the surface far too often, and that is, it's for the children. Republicans wanted to slow the growth of Medicare. Slow the growth of Medicare. And they took out the full-page ad of, essentially, it was Paul Ryan, you know, someone who looked a lot like Paul Ryan, pushing an elderly person in a wheelchair over a cliff. Now, Obama actually cut $700 billion in Medicare for Obamacare. Nothing. Crickets. And it's always the opposite. It's for the children. The Affordable Care Act. Well, the operative word there is act, because it was all an act. And so they often do that, but I mean, it is, they make these promises, and this is classic Joe Biden. Well, who's not going to applaud for curing cancer? The guy in the back, boom, no, no cure for cancer. Cancer Supporters of America or something, you know, some kind of CSA odd special interest group. We love cancer growth. Who's not going to support that? Some heckler in the back. Get him out of here. Boo! No cure for cancer. I mean, who's going to do that?
Well, yeah, I will say this, that you do pick an issue where there is no opposition.
Exactly. Well, no, but what did they do with man-made global warming?
Boo! I want the earth to die!
I mean, that's what they want you to believe, right, if you don't believe in it, and you don't support massive taxation. They want people to believe that if you debate it, they want you to believe that you're off in the corner, the Flat Earth Society, as Obama used to call them.
Well, I wonder if some of that will come out on the left today. And that's a great point. Well, look, we know that Biden exaggerated, but the criticism that he got shows that Republicans don't want to cure cancer.
Well, no, I mean, they let the late Ed Schultz, Republicans want you to die.
Yeah.
When it came to health care.
Yeah. They want to make money off your dead corpse.
Remember right.
That? Yeah. And we said, actually, the only people that wish to make money off the dead are Democrats with the death tax.
Right. And of course,
we don't know anybody else that's trying to make money off of anybody's dead body on the Republican side.
No. I mean, movie producers that make zombie movies, but that's
right.
Fake.
I wonder if that. I bet you I find it on social media today.
What's that?
I'm going to look for it.
Somebody criticizing
where somebody will say,
we all
know what Biden meant by that. Biden knows he can't cure cancer, but it's the fact that he wants to do it. And anybody who criticizes him, it just shows you the right. They don't care if people die of cancer.
Right.
Somebody's going to say that today.
Right. So it becomes this big, broad promise that you can't and won't ever have to fulfill. And it also becomes a positioning statement. Because you're daring Republicans to go, whoa, no care for cancer. I mean, it's just, you know. Because here's the thing. You noticed, did you say it on the air or off the air earlier with The Hill? The headline
Oh, the was headline, different. Yes. The headline was different. The headline said that Biden...
What was it? Biden wants to cure cancer, I think is what
yes,
it is.
Yes, wants to cure cancer.
Wants to cure cancer.
Right.
And then in the story, they have the quote.
The actual quote that's different promises. Than the headline.
Yeah. So, which is misleading. So this is where the media goes.
Right.
What do you think, Mr. Rubio, Senator Rubio, what do you think of former Vice President Biden's promise or not promise, but mission to cure cancer. You know, what they're waiting for is somebody to actually have the debate on it, so then they can show him saying, her saying, oh, no, that's unrealistic. which is the equivalent of boom, no cure for cancer.
It will be interesting to see where this goes today. It really will.
No,
I can't wait. Now I can. Can Biden? Can you beam me forward 24 hours? Because I want to get to tomorrow's show at this time just to see what the reaction is to all of
time travel.
Yes, exactly.
And I'm going to
not beam me. Can you beam? I forgot. Can you
for
beam
time travel?
Time travel or something?
I don't know how it works.
Because the transporter,
my machine's broke.
I don't think the transporter could do that.
It's a Keurig machine, right?
No, in order to do the time travel, remember they had to take the Enterprise up to like warp 10 or something.
Enterprise. I was thinking DeLorean. Never mind.
Okay.
Come on, Marty.
I know we're going to get the email. See, you guys are laughing and making fun of this. You don't want cancer
exactly.
to be cured.
No, yeah, that's it.
That's right.
Yeah, no, our conversation is the equivalent of boo, no cure for cancer. No, because that's exactly, it is a positioning statement, and it's a big, broad promise that you never have to fulfill, and you can't fulfill. So it's classic Biden.
866-90-RED-EYE.
You're pumped for summer, but are your tires? As the temperature rises, so does the importance of tire maintenance. The key to staying on the road this summer is to stay on top of regular tire inspections. Heat is a tire's worst enemy. The hotter a tire gets, the more likely a failure is to occur. Extreme heat not only causes tire rubber to deteriorate quicker, it also increases the pressure in tires. On a hot summer day, highway surface temperatures can climb to more than 150 degrees. Combine that with an underinflated tire that's already running hot, and it's only a matter of time before you have a serious tire issue on your hands. Check your tire pressure regularly to make sure it matches the recommended cold PSI level indicated on the sidewall of the tire. For extra tire assistance, stop into a TH truck service near you and let one of our expert technicians help.
This maintenance tip is brought to you by TA Truck Service. More bays, more expertise, more solutions.
We'll be right back with more Red Eye Radio with Eric Harley and Gary McNamara.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Carley, and I'm Gary McNamara. Mark my words, somebody's going to make that. Somebody will make that on social media today.
Yeah.
That when somebody, you know, goes after Joe Biden for making a ridiculous campaign promise, they're going to say, at least he cares. You don't care about curing cancer.
Well, I mean,
that is going to come out today.
The narrative will be, by the end of the day, Republicans don't want to cure cancer.
Yeah. I will find it on social media, and like I said, I can't wait. I know I'm going to see it somewhere today.
Mm-hmm.
So that's that. Besides cutting the lawn and trimming some bushes and a small tree in the back, the rest of the day has to be looking for that because you know it's going to come up. Unless somebody, again, it may not be the Biden campaign, but it will be. You'll see it on social media somewhere because the Biden campaign might just come out and say, "Hey, everybody knows what Joe meant. He's not guaranteeing that cancer is going to be cured in his time as president, or he's going to cure it. That's just his goal. That's what they'll say. We all know that's what's coming.
Yes.
Yeah. Because you don't double down on the fact that if you elect me president, I'll cure cancer.
Right.
That you cannot double down on.
No. Too many questions.
I don't think you can double down on that.
No, I don't think it'll be Biden answering the question. It'll be a spokesperson.
Yes.
They'll have to answer.
Gary McNamara and Eric Harley on Red Eye Radio.
And he's Eric. I'm Gary. 866-90 Red Eye. Yesterday we told you about the story of David Bellavia, who will be receiving the Medal of Honor for his actions in Iraq in the Second Battle of Fallujah. And I mentioned to you that I've never met David, but David works with a lot of my old friends at one of my former radio stations that I worked at in Buffalo, New York, WBEN. And he's a talk show host there now, and a very good talk show host.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And he found out on Monday, it was official from the White House that, you know, he would be receiving it on June 25th. By the way, this is a process that started in the Obama administration. It's almost 10 years long of going through and reviewing everything it's about 10 years old that they have been reviewing the actions and the awards that have been given to see if any of them should be upgraded. And the Pentagon decided that he should be. Now, again, they don't, as he said, they don't give you a process. They don't keep you, updated as to, you know, what's going on. As, you know, okay, by the way, you're closer to becoming a, you know, Medal of Honor winner. You just hear from them one day. And, you know, that's what happened to him. But I want to play this audio cut yesterday because he gave his first press conference yesterday. And I just want to play this part of it because he was asked, and it just shows you the warrior or the soldier's mind. And I thought it was an important audio cut to play. He was asked whether, look, everything that you've done in your life, from being a parent to your leadership skills, from being older, he was a little bit older when he was fighting than the other soldiers out there. Mm. Is that what got you to the point to act the way that you did in order to deserve this award? And this is his response.
You know, I don't think that I'm going to tell you something right now. I know people want to act like because you go to the military, you get the world-class training, and our equipment is incredible. Our training is elite. We're professionals. Those men 75 years ago on D-Day were not professional soldiers. They got 6 weeks of training, and they slapped the Nazis around. We are a professional military. This is what we choose to do. It's 0.1% of our population. But what makes the American military world-class has nothing to do with our equipment. It has nothing to do with our training. It has to do with why we're there. It's what we believe in. It's our community. It's our relationships with each other. It's that love, that bond. You're fighting for, you know, there's 1,007,000 reasons why people are divided when they walk outside. But I don't have time for that. I don't have time to judge you for who you worship. I don't have time to judge you by what you look like or who you love. If you are willing to stand with me and get shot at, then I'm willing to lead you, I'm willing to follow you, and I'm willing to take out whatever we have to take out because we're coming home. And if you get hurt, you know, I'm going to be so close to you that round's going to hit me too. That's what it's all about. And putting yourself in that situation, it's really, everything is negotiable. Everything's negotiable. It's you know, well, you did this because it was the right. No, those every day, though, who's falling on grenades? I mean, who even thinks about that? Jason Dunham from Sio, New York, grenade falls on the ground. He jumps on it. Travis Atkins grabs a suicide bomber with a vest. He knows what's going to happen. He's wrestling with a suicide bomber. That's not something that, you know, it's not that he was a Burger King employee that saw a guy walk in with a vest. That's a totally different story. This was a professional soldier who knew there was a threat around him every single day. And when the threat came upon his unit, he realized that his life would end, but other people's life would continue. And that's the most beautiful thing in the world to me.
Wow.
I know, extremely powerful. I listened to the whole press conference.
Everything, any words, you know, after that to try and describe how moving what he just said was are just way too small, frankly. You know, we talked about it before. We talk about it on Memorial Day. We talk about the nature of individuals who choose to serve. You know, but I mean, in those moments, I mean, what he just described, how many people are made of that?
you know, he was in part of, I think it was the interview that I heard the other day, because he's done quite a few interviews, even before he became a Medal of Honor recipient. And as he said, this is for everybody. He said, because I'm the guy that wasn't killed.
Right.
He said, this goes for everybody who I served with, and people that I didn't serve with, and people that lived and people that did not live, because as far as he is concerned, and this is how he looks at it, anybody who serves as a professional soldier in the U.S. military who gets to the point of being, you know, with him or in a group like him doing what he does, they would have all done the same thing. That he did what any of the people around him, because when you have to read, when you read exactly what he went through, and not the shortened one, because there's a lot of things that are that shorten out what, you know, he went through. And he said actually the whole thing is based over, you know, more than one battle and a few days. But when you go through the entire thing and see what he did, you're like, whoa. Mm-hmm. I mean, as I mentioned yesterday, he was involved in hand-to-hand combat.
Yeah.
He had to kill the enemy up close. And as he said, you know, one of the soldiers that he killed was looking right at him and smiling. He was looking him straight in the eye as he died.
Mm.
And the soldier put his hand up to his face. And he said, I thought he was like saying, oh, you know, he was trying to, his last words were something of, you know, my initial thought from our culture is, you know, I'm so sorry, whatever, because he realized he was probably smiling because of what he was told he was going to go to, and he had accomplished his mission. He said, but, you know, basically I killed a guy. He's dying in my arms, blood all over the place. He's looking at me, and he said, and that SOB's face will be in my life, you know, in my life every day of my entire life. Mm-hmm. Saying he'll never get that out of his mind, ever, no matter what he does. So you don't kill somebody up that close, and it will never leave you. That never leaves you. Right. And he was involved in hand-to-hand combat, but his point was the fact that I'm just the guy who lived. I got the opportunity to do all of this to protect my people, but every one of my people would have done the same thing. I was just the one that didn't get injured or killed. And when you hear him say things, and when you hear the mentality of a warrior, and I know that many people, I'm not going to get political here, but I know many people disagree and will disagree with the mindset of a warrior and what you have to do. You should listen to David Bellavia and how he explains it.
Mm-hmm.
You should listen to his whole story. You should listen to all the interviews that he does, because he explains it and he talks about the fact that, you know, when he did all of this, he was a father and a husband.
Mm-hmm.
So, but at that time, you do what you have to do, and he has no regrets. He said you can't walk out with any regrets. He said, and with all the horror that he has been through, it's the fact that you come out of it. And by the way, he was very encouraging of people joining the military. It's not like right. He was saying, I was in the military, I don't believe you should join. He lays out the horror of war and what you have to go through to do it. And coming out the other end, said the thing that to him is that he appreciates every single moment of life. He appreciates the freedoms that we have here. He wants other people to understand that the freedom that you have is fought for, and that there are things worth fighting for.
Yeah.
And it's a story that, and I know I'm closer to this one, because even though I don't know David, I know everybody that he works with extremely well. Some of the people that I've known in broadcasting longer, I mean, extremely, extremely close friends of mine who work directly with him that I have heard from. And, you know, the things that they have said about him is he's just the most humble person that you could ever meet. And so you cannot be recognized more for your service in this country than the Medal of Honor. There is no higher award.
Right.
And he's getting it. He deserves it when you read what he went through. But also don't forget what he said is that he simply represents, this award is given to him, but it represents everyone who stood by him and who he stood by in war.
We talked about the Greatest Generation the other day, the remembrance of D-Day, and we also had the discussion about how that generation did not talk about things. They didn't talk about war. Back in the day, PTSD was known as shell-shocked or for whatever reason, they would not expand on their service. Even my maternal grandfather, there's still a lot that I'm trying to learn from the family. It's important here because he is sharing this information in a way from a perspective that is unlike any other. And we talked about preserving the history, preserving all of these stories for a reason. You know, we've become a nation that more and more wants to just put away and close the door on things that are horrific. But the lessons that you learn, and there's no way to experience what he experienced without going through the same.
No.
But the point is to at least have, and this is, I think, a benefit to a society, to at least have the understanding in your mind to be able to picture somebody doing that and knowing why they did it. When you understand that, we understand our society and the very basic foundation of our country, of a free society, and what is required. And when you do that, you have a greater appreciation altogether for everything.
And just so everybody knows, I mean, David is the first person from the Iraq War who is living, who will receive the Medal of Honor.
Hmm.
So I would suggest, and again, I normally don't do this. I think people can, you know, figure out what to do. But I have over the last, since we knew last Friday, the official announcement was Sunday, or it was Monday. I've just done a ton of research on what he went through and a ton of interviews.
Right.
It's worth it to go online. And all I have to do is put in David Bellavia, and it comes up. David Bellavia, Medal of Honor, or whatever.
Right,
and,
right.
Or Fallujah and his name, and it comes up. And watch some of the documentaries that have been done about what he went through. It's worth it. I mean, we know, there are wars and conflicts that we get in that I support. It doesn't mean that I ever wish to sanitize war.
No, it can't ever be sanitized.
866-90-RED-EYE.
Get in touch with Red Eye Radio, toll free at 866-90-RED-EYE.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90 Red Eye. Welcome and good morning.
You just saw something about heavy metal music releasing. What is a good release, and it helps stem anger.
Study finds heavy metal music helps combat emotions linked. Helps combat emotions like anger and depression.
Yeah, right.
So there you go.
Yeah, if you're doing it right. Not that stupid hairband stuff, but yeah.
No, it was done in New Zealand.
All right.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, isn't that AC/DC territory? I mean, isn't there like a conflict of interest there?
I don't know that I consider them metal, you know? I've never really considered them metal.
Okay, all right.
Really, I think the biggest influence on Angus was was Chuck Berry, really, if you think about it.
That's true.
But just like a harder version of Chuck Berry, but just rock and roll.
Yeah, I meant like harder. But heavy, yeah. I meant like harder rock.
But yeah, I mean, if you Thunderstruck by AC/DC, how does that not get you motivated, man? I'm cranking it up. My headphones can't go loud enough. I'm already losing my hearing. Come on, crank it up.
You can't be depressed and listen to that song, can
you? Right, exactly. Great stuff, man.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One. Now, it's Red Eye Radio. Gary McNamara and Eric Harley talk about everything from politics to social issues and news of the day. Whether you're up late or just starting your day, welcome to the show. From the Pilot Flying J Studios, this is Red Eye Radio.
All across America and the world, 866-90-RED-EYE. I'm Gary McNamara. He's Eric Harley. Well, interesting day in Iowa yesterday as both the president and Joe Biden were there. Let's go back and forth for a moment, okay?
All right, here we go.
The economic policies of the previous administration enriched foreign nations at the expense of our nation, and not only the previous administration, many administrations before them. They allowed foreign nations to plunder our country, to steal our jobs, to take our wealth. It's all coming back, folks.
Well, he thinks that being tough, he's being tough. Well, it's easy to be tough when someone else is feeling the pain and taking the hit. How many farmers across this state and across the nation have had to face the prospects of losing their business, losing their farm because of these Trump tariffs?
Despite our amazing success, the Democrat Party has never been angrier. They're so angry. Do you ever see people so angry? For what? For what? These are angry people. Every day, the Democrat Party is becoming more and more unhinged and more extreme. They're going crazy.
The tax cut he passed for multimillionaires and billionaires. Guess what? When I'm president, it's gone. It's gone. I don't want to punish anybody. Folks, we need a fairer tax code.
One thing that I noticed, did the president not sound like the president who gave the Normandy speech?
The tone was very different.
The tone is a lot lower even than Biden's. And I wonder whether, it could be just the setting that he was in. If it wasn't a big hall, like, you know, some of the massive arenas at that point, you just, the excitement level is just a completely different ballgame.
Right. Well, any other rally, I mean, it's huge. And the energy has been huge. But I wonder if there's a number of points that he wants to make. You know, we go back to the Claire McCaskill thing, the crazy Democrats. I wonder if the campaign is putting together, all right, here's some talking points we really need to start out against the party itself. Because there's 21 of them. He can go one by one, but it really just point out what's going on with the party. And he's talking about angry Democrats. I would throw in crazy Democrats and what they're trying to do. But you really don't have to do that just yet. You can get to that
right
at some point. And at this point, you just try and position them as angry. And they are. So,
well, one of the things you don't want to do is, who was it in Congress yesterday that, it was a Democrat in Congress who went after Trump supporters.
Right.
In essence, said Trump supporters are ignorant and dumb. A number of them, over the last couple of years,
they're just a bunch of mindless individuals.
Right. When you attack them, you want to make sure you're attacking the politicians.
Right.
That's the only thing you wish to make clear where the Democrats do not. But that was not all those audio cuts that we played can't even come close to the top audio cut of the day from Iowa. And if you haven't heard this, get ready. It came from Joe Biden. And this promise, this political promise, campaign promise that he made.
I promise you, if I'm elected president, you're going to see the single most important thing that changes in America is we're going to cure cancer. You think I'm... But that's another issue.
So there you go.
All right, let's say it.
We've spent some time discussing it on the show today.
The promise. beyond that.
The promise.
His tone or his speech. His speech patterns. He's still slurring a bit. And he's slow. You know, the president picks nicknames for everyone, and they probably went into the campaign war room and were trying to decide the right one because Creepy Joe Biden was out there, social media. Creepy Joe Biden was it. But Sleepy Joe Biden, I think, is more effective because he sounds like he's sleepy.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know. Dentures, we have no idea why the speech is different, but it is different. And it's noticeable. We're very early on, and Biden hasn't really made much of a splash. If you think about it, this is kind of one of the biggest splashes he's made, only because of the nature of the promise, right?
Well, I guess we'll see how big of the Hyde Amendment was. A pretty big splash.
Well, it was a big gaffe.
It was a different kind of splash,
right. Yes. But I guess the point is that he's not really out there on the campaign trail every day. You're not hearing, you know, here are the list of things. Here's, you know, it's not when it's ramped up. My question is, at a huge rally, if people show up, what's it going to do? What's it going to be? What is his speech pattern going to be like? Because he does look very exhausted.
This came from former Obama advisor David Axelrod. This is interesting. Yesterday, he expressed concerns that former Vice President Joe Biden is playing into the caricature made by President Trump that has questioned the Democratic frontrunner's fitness to lead. Both Trump and Biden exchanged harsh attacks on one another yesterday as they both made campaign stops, with the president telling reporters outside the White House that the former VP is weak mentally. Said Axelrod, the thing that I think is important for Biden is to run an energetic campaign, which you and I both noted has not been the case, that dispels any of these caricatures, Axelrod told CNN anchor Anderson Cooper. And I think also besides the weak mentally would be the sleepy.
Right.
He hasn't had a very heavy campaign schedule. He has sort of played into the caricature. And I think he's going to have to come forward with ideas, and he's going to have some campaign energy. Axelrod, who is now a CNN host and political analyst and former Obama advisor, explained that ahead of the Iowa caucus, people expect to see you. They want to interact with you, stressing that candidates have to be there. Quote, you can't do drop-bys and use them as backdrops to attack the president, Axelrod added. You've got to do much more than that. So I think that's very important, end of quote.
Yeah, you know, you mentioned earlier the persona of the president. We've talked about it before, but make no mistake. Donald J. Trump walks into a room he owns. The energy at a rally, obviously, they're all there for him. I mean, when you're the point, it's like being a stand-up comedian. If you're the headliner and not the opening act, they're there to see you
and you better deliver because they paid a bunch of money to see you. But for a campaign, they're going to show up. They're going to support you. They're going to applaud you. And the energy is right now still very incredible. I think right now it is probably as great, if not greater, than what it was in 2016. I don't have any way of measuring that, but it's still very, very high, the energy. His energy is high.
His energy is high. The rallies, the energy is high. Again, the quotes that we had from yesterday,
right.
He seemed to be down a little bit. That's not bad, as we have said. As we said after the speech in Normandy, he needs more than that. Not right. that he lets the other side go or disappear. Mm-hmm. That's not going to happen to begin with.
Right.
But if I'm a political consultant, I say, look, you can't have that side disappear. But if you can be, if you do both sides, mm-hmm. be the social media troll. I'd like a little bit more discipline in being the social media troll.
Right.
But you still can't drop that completely. And at the same time, have energetic rallies, and at the same time, have those speeches where you come across as a leader, as a world leader, not just as presidential leader. You know, I was sitting there thinking when you and I were talking about his speech at Normandy, where I said, wow, he's just become the leader of the world. And I was thinking of what's his name from NBC when he said Obama at Normandy back in 2009 rose above, that he just wasn't the president, that he was, he rose above everybody like a god.
Yeah, right.
Well,
hovered, yeah.
Yeah, hovered. No, we're not going to go that far. that would be absurd to relate any human being as a deity, as what's his name? I can't think of his name from an NBC did that night. I can't think of the guy's name who did that at that point. It was, I just can't think of it. The guy who said he hovered.
I'll think of it in a second. Yeah, we kept that cut around forever.
We had that cut for we played it probably for 8 years.
Yes,
straight from Newsweek. I just can't think of the guy's name. But the energy of the president is there. We all know. Look, when Acosta, when the left says that was a great speech, we know he's got the potential to do great speeches. That was a great speech that he gave there. So he has the potential to do both.
Evan Thomas,
yes.
Yeah. I was going back to see if we have it. I don't think we have it anymore. But then as I was searching, it came to mind.
And in other ways, the president has to be careful.
Right.
You and I talked about, now we know remember when it came out that Kim Jong-un killed the negotiating team and put the one guy in hard labor.
Yeah. Right.
Well, the one guy has appeared in public.
Right.
And that was in hard labor. So, again, they don't know, and everybody's been quiet whether that really happened or whether it did not happen. And the president has said, well, we're not really sure yet. So the president, when he came out yesterday and said he had a personal letter from Kim Jong-un and everything else, even though even we cringed a little bit going,
Right.
But if he can get a deal, then he wins. And we believe this is purely a negotiating tactic. The president pounded by the left on it. How can you have a love letter? They were calling it a love letter between a dictator and Trump. And it's not. Clearly, Trump is negotiating. If you know anything about the people that are backing him, that's how you know it. When you know you have a John Bolton, and when you know you're one of your advisors is John Bolton and your Secretary of State is Mike Pompeo, that's why I look at it and say, okay, it's his own negotiating style. I don't know whether I agree with it yet.
Right.
I'm uncomfortable with it unless it works. But I don't know what the end game is yet, so I can't tell you.
Right.
But, yeah, we both heard that. So the president has – but he's got to show, I think, in the next year and a half, he's got to show some progress there. Otherwise, he does look like he's being manipulated.
Well – look, if it is verified that Kim Jong-un did do those things, you have to close the door and you can't return. That's irreversible. Well,
we can't return to the
table.
Yes.
It's over. It's off. And you ramp up the sanctions to the highest possible level. But here's the problem. I guess here would be the point on that. You need to work to verify that to the best and quickest extent possible. You need to get that information and make it known to the American public. If if you have that information, then you need to act on it one way or the other.
Well,
if it's verified.
It's like, don't, as far as I'm concerned, unless there is something there, and we will know, we don't know the conclusion. Waving the thing about the deal with Mexico that and
right.
implying that there's the secret part of it when Mexico's mm-hmm. saying there's no secret part.
Mm-hmm.
Well, if you end up that you're BSing the American public, you look bad. There's no reason to do that.
Right.
And so, again, this is a mixture of a president when it comes to campaigning. The best thing that this president has for him right now is his energy, and that the other side, and I'm not saying this as part of political rhetoric. This is, to me, serious political analysis of the other political party. Their ideas and the people that throw them out seem like they're nuts.
Right.
Because the ideas are, and we have stated with Trump, for as eclectic.
That's one way to put it. Yeah.
As he can be, the policies that he's promoting still today are very moderate.
Sure.
And totally, completely in the mainstream of the last 50 years in America. The Democrats are not. They're nuts.
Mm-hmm.
The programs and the things that they are advocating are crazy. Open borders. Biden coming out saying the first thing he wants to do is ensure that, you know, the pass the Equality Act, which means that a man can be a woman at any time. The Green New Deal that everybody seems to be jumping on, which would have to transform the country into a socialist slash communist country. These things are nuts. And when you propose nutty ideas, you come across as a nutcase yourself.
Yes, right.
Say what you want about Trump. The things that he's proposing, as you said earlier, Biden's out there saying, I promise to, I promise to cure cancer. Trump is saying, I want a wall. That Trump guy's nuts.
Exactly. Well, that's it. I mean, look at everything the left has done. Out of all the things that are crazy, the promise to cure cancer is just a crazy political promise, right? It's a noble endeavor that everybody agrees with, but it's a crazy political promise. Look at all the crazy stuff that the Democrats actually want to do, by the way, including what Biden said he would do first.
I think you're just
the Equality
Act. I think you're just criticizing Biden on this because you don't want to cure cancer, Eric.
Boo! No cure for cancer!
I'm telling you, you're going to see that on social media later today. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Reduced ending stocks for most major commodities in USDA's latest supply and demand report is translated into price bumps. For instance, the season-ending average price estimate for corn rose 50 cents in June to $3.80 a bushel, thanks to a month-over-month adjustment down of ending stocks, which if realized would be at the lowest levels in 6 years. Soybean prices, thanks to a combination of lower ending stocks from May plus the higher corn price, increased 15 cents from the previous month, with the season ending average price estimate at $8.25 a bushel. And the latest price estimate for wheat comes in at $5.10 a bushel, up from the previous month. Again, that is due to lower ending stocks, despite a less than 1% increase in wheat production from May. Orange production forecasts were lowered 1% in June, but post-Hurricane Irma recovery is reflected in a 34% increase in orange production year over year. I'm Rod Main reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
The USDA report is brought to you by Cenex Roadmaster XL Premium Highway Diesel Fuel.
Coming up, more with Gary McNamara and Eric Harley. It's Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. Ocasio Cortez, everybody wants. She is a wanted endorsement now
okay.
by the Democrats. Coming up.
Here's your forecast.
5 to 7 day rain totals put the bulk of the precip right around the Oklahoma, Kansas, and Missouri region with upwards of 4 inches of rain. That band of showers that'll see the most precip for the U.S. will extend into the lower Tennessee and Ohio valleys on up into the northeast. Can't outrule a shower today in the south or in the mid-Atlantic. As we get out to the west, though, it will be not only a dry week, but a hot one as well. Excessive heat will continue to build and grip much of the west from the desert southwest up through California and Nevada into the Pacific Northwest. It's all due to a ridge of high pressure expanding, heat warnings, advisories in effect for today, and a number of major metro areas. Portland will hit 96 today. That'll subside somewhat tomorrow, 85. Boise, 90 degrees today. Look for Las Vegas to hit 107. Phoenix, 111 degrees. Your national forecast from Red Eye Radio. I'm meteorologist John Trout.
Young, fresh, hip, and cool. Eric Harley and Gary McNamara on the new Red Eye Radio.
He's Eric Harley. I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. Well, at least I was a talk show host long enough to see the most incredible, the biggest political promise ever in American presidential history.
Yeah.
Hope and change was one thing. That
right.
could have meant anything. Curing cancer, that means another.
Well, I mean, we said with all the money promises, 2,000 per household every month. Nah, 50,000 for an 18-year-old. We said, okay, look, just go for the full billion. We'll make everybody a billionaire. We'll all be on the same plane. We'll just print enough money to make everybody a billionaire.
And figured you can't do that, so you say you'll cure cancer.
Right. Well, okay. and the whole thing is, it is one of those hope and change type promises. It's one you know you don't ever have to fulfill because no one's going to hold you to it. I mean, today the back and forth will be there. Obviously. The media is going to have some back and forth on it. But who goes out? It really is a positioning. I'm not going to say it's brilliant, but it works in this way, and the left will use it this way in that positioning that we mentioned earlier for those just joining us. It's not just one of those promises that you can't fulfill, is noble in its intent, but you can't possibly fulfill, nor will you ever as president. It's a positioning statement to have the leftist media go ask Marco Rubio, what do you think of his promise? And essentially the answer will be, boo, no cure for cancer. Is that it? Because it'll come back, well, it's you can't actually make the promise. It's a noble effort, and what the headline will be, the Marco Rubio doesn't believe in the promise to cure cancer. You know, it will be a positioning statement, and Republicans don't want to cure cancer.
I do believe you'll see that on social media today. I don't know who will tweet it, but I can guarantee that it'll be something like, look, Joe Biden was talking about his son and other people that have cancer, and he truly wants to cure cancer, and so he simply misstated it, and Republicans have jumped on this, and it just shows that Republicans really don't have the incentive to want to cure cancer or find a cure for cancer.
Right.
Somebody's going to say that on social media.
Yeah.
By the way, I just said it there in that voice, and I went, that sounds pretty convincing.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's wrong, but it doesn't matter whether it's wrong. It's whether you can make the political rhetoric work. If you can make it right. work, then everything's okay. In other news, got to make sure we got this out. The builders of the private border wall in New Mexico have been ordered to keep the gate permanently open. According to a report in BuzzFeed, the half-mile wall near Sunland Park cut off official access to a levee and a dam and public access to Monument One, which is a marker of the U.S.-Mexican border.
Hmm.
The We Build the Wall barrier also featured a gate built on about 33 feet of federal property without proper advance permission. This is normally done well in advance of a construction project, said Lori Kamansky, spokeswoman for the International Boundary and Water Commission, which handles waterway issues between the U.S. and Mexico. They think they can build now and ask questions later. That's not how it works. Commission officials propped open the gate in response earlier this week to preserve public access and, by extension, making the wall easy to breach. We're going to lock it in an open position until we come to a mutual decision on how this gate is going to operate. The president and founder of We Build the Wall accused the panel of legal overreach and of complicity in the illegal immigration invasion of the United States. Look, you and I talked about this. This is imagery,
right?
Okay, this is imagery and symbolism, and and I see a lot of people on social media talking, and we need to protect that private border wall. It's less than a half mile long. It's got problems. Number one, because of not going to the city for permits, they'll probably have other problems there. This is part of the problem when we talk about building a 2,000-mile wall. That there are portions where you're not going to be able to build a wall. You know, we've discussed all the problems before. It doesn't mean that a wall built by the United States in certain sections won't be of a great help, because it will be. There are other places where it's literally impossible to build the wall. But this, to me, reminded me, and I told you about it earlier, this whole thing with this and the passion behind it reminded me of the Woody Allen movie that I saw in the 70s in college, Love and Death. Mm. And the guy comes up and he says, "I've got my piece of land." Mm-hmm. You know, it was the peasants with the piece of land. "I've got my piece of land." And he was holding in his hand like a bunch of dirt, and there was a little model house on top of it.
Yeah.
And I thought to myself, I mean, it's strictly imagery and symbolism. It doesn't mean anything for security of the border.
Right.
So let's not make too much out of it. I understand the symbolism and imagery behind it. I agree with the symbolism and imagery behind it, but it's symbolism and imagery.
Right. Plain and simple.
Right. This isn't an act of substance to truly stop illegal immigration.
Right.
It's a rallying cry that you can use on a consistent basis. And if you don't follow all the rules and regulations of zoning and what you have to do to build it, then you can cry and put out the rallying cry that, you know, as they're doing, and probably successfully, as I said right there, I'll use the quote. The panel is engaged in legal overreach and in complicity in the illegal immigration invasion of the United States, and you can keep that going. And hopefully, you may want to raise money by doing it or whatever. But this isn't about substance of border security; it's about imagery and symbolism.
Right.
That I agree with, but understand it is only imagery and symbolism.
Yes.
So. In other news out there, the front page of or the lead article in the Drudge Report that you and I have had some fascinating discussion on and off the air throughout the morning on, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez dangles 2020 endorsement, Bernie Sanders or Elizabeth Warren.
Uh-huh. All right. So from the candidate's perspective, man, they want it. She's the rock star right now.
She is the only coveted endorsement on the Democrat side.
Right. You could have said, I don't know, when he was running against Cruz in Texas, that Beto was a rock star. That's not the case anymore.
No, he's done.
Yeah, that's over.
He's done.
Yeah. The question you brought up is, first of all, aside from that, in the Democratic Party, whose endorsement matters? Whose endorsement matters right now? Obama's doesn't. We know that. So that's off the table. So whose does?
Outside of when we get down to the last few candidates next year, and it might be a Biden then endorsing a Bernie, or a Bernie endorsing a Biden,
right?
Or Biden and Bernie endorsing Warren?
Mm. Because they're just looking to send their supporters that way.
And hopefully the DNC will pay off some of their campaign bills.
Yeah, right.
But besides those that are just the natural endorsements that happen once you're defeated, when you look at the entire Democrat Party right now, who is the only must-have endorsement?
AOC.
That shows you how bad the Democrat Party is right now. It shows you how lost they are.
I mean, seriously, I've been racking my brain since you asked it earlier in the show, and there is no one. There's no one else. It's AOC. So then what? This is what I said about the energy. If you look at, you know, the first part of the primary in 2008, you know, we need the first female president, Hillary. We need the first black president, Obama. And then it got down to that. And then, of course, Obama won the primary. It was a given. But it's 2008 is light years from the Democratic Party of 2019. And who knows what it'll be in 2020. But right now, it's all about you cannot pass unless you get by Queen AOC.
Nobody cares about Obama's endorsement. Think about it. Right. And it's so amazing when you just think, Eric, it's really just not even 11 years. Well, yeah. It's about 11 years because right. The political idolatry was going on at this time.
Sure.
Where he was actually, as Evan Thomas said on D-Day in mm-hmm. 2009, mm-hmm. He rises above.
He hovers.
He's not provincial. He hovers like a god.
Yeah.
and think about that. Well, I'm telling you, when you're a rock god, that's the one thing when we talk about rock stars and rock gods,
right.
All of a sudden, nobody pays attention to them anymore.
Yeah, right.
And then they start complaining, ageism. It's ages. I'm sorry, I flipped to the topic of Grandma Gaga. They're mm-hmm, complaining mm-hmm, about the mm-hmm. fact that. She's not appreciated anymore. That's right. Madonna, for people that don't know.
Yeah.
But nobody cares about Obama. Nobody's seeking Obama. No. Think about this. AOC, probably one of the most clueless people to ever serve in Congress. One of the most ignorant people. One of the people in Congress that probably least know how the world runs. I would bet you Gerald Nadler has a better idea of how the world runs than AOC.
Yeah, that's a bet I would take.
I might have to backtrack on that.
I'm well, sure. I was. I'm right at about 51%, but I'm a gambler.
You did pause.
I'm a gambler.
You did pause. I did. You did pause.
I did. Yeah. It is, but that's where they are. That's exactly where they are as a party. Because, okay, let's say AOC comes out, I don't know, this weekend, and she endorses Elizabeth Warren to be the nominee. Now what? On endorsements. On the endorsement front, now what? Nothing. Until everything starts to come together and, you know, into the primary and you have someone who is going to become, looks like they might become the presumptive nominee or then becomes the presumptive nominee and everybody just chimes in. The other 21 chime in. By that time, keep in mind, 9 are polling at 0.
Right.
Beto, who was a rock star just a few minutes ago. Nothing.
And so, by the way, that story hit yesterday about the Hyde Amendment.
So what will their endorsements mean? Right. What will their endorsements mean? Really nothing. What will Bernie's mean? Well, Bernie didn't get the nomination. What is his endorsement basically is part of the process of, like you said, hopefully getting his bills paid, his campaign bills paid by the DNC. But besides that, what is it? What does it mean? Because in the world of AOC, you're not the boss. She's the boss. She's the hero. So here's my question. Because all the stuff yesterday was about, who will she endorse? Only because she's been seen with Warren. They've been working on some stuff, coming out, calling out Steve Mnuchin, the Treasury Secretary, and things like that. But that's not an endorsement. Just yet, and I'm not sold she's going to make an endorsement. But you and I did come to the agreement. We believe she'll get prime time speech time on stage at the DNC.
I think that every single person running for president on the Democrat side looks at her and says, she's a guaranteed, if she endorses me, that's 20 to 30% increase in my poll numbers. 866-90-RED-EYE.
Shell recently launched Shell Rotella T6-15W40 Full Synthetic. Megan Pino is Shell Rotella Global Brand Manager and tells us what was behind the development and more about the product.
We are excited to launch this new full synthetic Shell Rotella T6-15W40. This is the first time we have a full synthetic in 15W40 viscosity range. We know that truckers love 15W40. That is the primary viscosity grade used in the U.S. and Canada and really in many parts of the world as well. So our customers can enjoy some of the benefits of cold temperature properties, low temperature and high temperature, allowing for the oil to flow faster into the engine and protect it better. Having a full synthetic also allows for extended drain opportunities for those that are trying to push the limits a little bit. But we always recommend following their manufacturer recommendations and doing oil analysis to ensure that they are changing when appropriate.
For more, go to Rotella.com. This engine report is a service of Shell Rotella.
Lines open for your calls. 866-90-RED-EYE on Red Eye Radio.
It's Red Eye Radio. He is Eric Harley, and I'm Gary McNamara, 866-90-RED-EYE. You said the most interesting thing about a half hour ago to me during a break. You said, Gary, we're not even into election season yet.
We don't even have a debate behind us yet. hasn't been one debate yet. Really, none of them have really said much at all. I mean, they're really not campaigning. They are out there, but they're still kind of testing the waters. Once it becomes more competitive, then we'll see more stuff. I mean, but we're not into the heart of it yet. We haven't even reached a debate
yet. We haven't reached the inter-party attacks yet.
Exactly.
This is Red Eye Radio on Westwood One.